Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is Feedback Friday. And so I'm going to deal with feedback. Let me just kind of start with feedback, and then we'll get back into the political exorcism that I've kind of been covering over the past, at least last Friday and Monday. And just so you know, folks, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday are really critical shows. I know we're just focused on content and, you know, the chatter and so forth, but that the information that we are extrapolating out of the ratification debates, you in constitutional constructs, you should view that as scripture, because this is where you learn that when you look at a woman with lust, you have committed adultery already. Instead of just you not to go out and commit adultery, you understand a deeper meaning to what these things really mean. And that's why these are so important. They are literally telling you what those lines in the Constitution mean. As a matter of fact, they did it so clearly and so easily, you know, hindsight being 2020, and I honestly believe that the reason why the scriptures were done the way they were, because it forces us to apply faith. Because there's all sorts of questions that the only way you really know the truth is through faith. And everybody that understands that, you know, I know you understand that. Those that don't, work on it. That's all I can say. You got to work on your faith. Anyway, as I have been instructed by a person I closely work with regarding Reclaiming the Republic and trying to get guests and so forth, you need to understand that that debt is fraud. That we the people, and even our legitimate government, because the government is us the people, it is our representatives. And when you send people to actually be political actors and not representatives of you and that Constitution, that's how they get away with frauding you or defrauding America in spending money on things they have no authority to do. Technically, it's your fault because, one, you're electing them and you're not holding them accountable. You're allowing them to be political actors. When you allow political theatrics, you just might as well kiss your liberties goodbye. And you might as well just kiss your money goodbye. Everything that you value, precious, that's precious to you, your most valuable, your thoughts, your property, your life, they're playing with it. That debt is fraud. And I've been out on this for a long time. I just don't say it every day. And I was told, because I say it's now or never, and that's a reality. It is now or never. We got to start waking up the people to say, you know, if you want things to change, stop doing what you're doing and actually do something different. Hold your government accountable. Don't just elect another good guy because he's going to get corrupted as soon as he gets in there. It is a corruption machine now. It is a corruption machine. There's a whole bunch of corrupt people, and many of them are good people thinking that they're doing good stuff. You know, you got the conservative corruption, you got the liberal corruption, and somewhere in between they make compromises. And every time they do, you lose liberties, you lose ground, you lose property, you lose. And so I was watching, and I've asked a friend, another friend that actually, you know, we work with in Reclaiming the Republic, and he's a good Christian. He's listening to this video between G. Edward Griffin and... I forget. It was doggone it. Hold on a quick second. Let me go to my email because I think, he has this up. And so I will basically play this real quick to say it is David Webb. Apparently, David Webb is a financial advisor, smart financial guy that left America. And he left America because he saw what was going on. And in a way, you know, my take, anybody that abandons, you know, the house, anybody that abandons the family, you know, they've kind of already expressed their considerations. They don't care about saving. They're not necessarily leaving. Now, just maybe these were some bad decisions. But those who joined the sovereign citizen movement are only taking care of themselves. Those who, you know, say, I'm not going to pay taxes anymore. You know, I'm only going to take care of myself. So there was a conversation. And these are long conversations with Ed Griffin and so forth. And I don't believe that they're talking about the real root of the problem. Remember, I've used to comment about downstream, upstream, and really all the way upstream at the source of the problem. They talk about a river of gold being poured into the hands of these corrupt people. Well, that river of gold was created by a whole bunch of fraud. In other words, they're pointing to the Federal Reserve, but the Federal Reserve was not just, it's not the only part of the problem. The reason the Federal Reserve was created was because Wilson was spending money like a drunken sailor. And, you know, I know a lot of sailors that probably offends because, I mean, they don't deserve that title. But that's the only metaphor I can give you. But Woodrow Wilson, in the turn of the century, you know, in the progressive era, Teddy Roosevelt kicked off the progressive era. Then Taft kind of, you know, was not progressive enough. So Teddy Roosevelt basically challenged Taft so that Woodrow Wilson would get elected. And we never looked back. We had, I mean, we went from progressive to, you know, an incompetent president. I mean, even Harding considered himself, he was an honest man. At that, at least, he said, I don't deserve to be in the in the office. To a decent man that fell backwards into the office, which was Calvin Coolidge, because Harding died. And then from there, it had been a series of progressives. Now, I know people look at John F. Kennedy. John F. Kennedy was technically a progressive, but I think, you know, he started having a change of heart, which, you know, was probably the number one reason why somebody assassinated him. Anyway, or he was assassinated, and George Bush and all that. You can go down these conspiracies. And bottom line, I don't want to entertain that. What I want to do is I want to actually get to the meat of this. When you listen to people talking about the problem, what they're doing is they're giving you a view of what's going by in the river. They're downstream. They're looking at the problem, and they're talking about, you know, all of these people, the operators and everything else of how this is all working, that this river and all of this stuff in this context of the debt is being created because nations around the world are deliberately involved in defrauding you, the people. They're not only defrauding you, the people of America. They're defrauding their own people, because if you really look at it, America, you the people, we the people, have been basically funding the growth of communism and the tyranny that has been happening all around the world, because they've been siphoning off through the Federal Reserve all of this interest and all of this money that goes into their hands. And they talk about what, you know, the problem that this is all creating. Now, I've not listened to the whole thing, so I'm not going to make a judgment. But I do have a bias, and I'm going to tell you my bias. Nobody really wants to talk about the real solution. The fact is that they don't have the authority to spend that money. When they enter into a debt, right? I want you to understand, what is debt? Debt is a contract, right? Right? I mean, fundamentally, when you go to the bank and you say, I want to borrow money, can you borrow money on just debt, right? No, you can't. And as a matter of fact, when we look at the Constitution and we look at the fact that the federal government can only do those things. This is the supremacy clause, right? The supremacy clause basically states that this Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and that all laws in pursuant to the Constitution, in pursuance, but the laws that are pursuant to the Constitution, in other words, laws that are created that are based on those roles, responsibilities, powers, and properties, eligibility standards, and restrictions. Now, why am I saying all that? Because I've created a color-coded constitution that identifies all the violations. What I'm also doing now is a color-coded constitution to give you, to break down what parts of the Constitution are powers, what parts are roles and responsibilities, what parts are standards or eligibilities, what parts are restrictions, what parts are properties, and so forth. So I'm creating this color-coded so you can actually look at the words and go, oh, okay, yeah, that's a power. Okay, so they have that exclusive or they have that specific power. I am proving to you that they have nowhere in here in the Constitution the authority or power to just spend money on things that are good ideas, such as healthcare. When they started spending money in the 1800s because people were dying, or there was a threat of death because of some plague, typhoid, or something like that, the federal government, because they had this money, they should never have had that money. As a matter of fact, they started building up this revenue that they were making enough money that they could actually start spending. And they realized this beautiful thing of just simply servicing the debt. This is why after Andrew Jackson was the recipient of the Madison policy of fiscal, Madison and Monroe's policies of fiscal responsibility after the Revolutionary War Part II. In other words, the War of 1812, when that was the second part of the Revolutionary War, when we finally ended those skirmishes with Britain. Most people will tell you, oh, well, Britain, they owned us at that point. No, they didn't. As a matter of fact, we went into that treaty and they violated, even in the first treaty, most people think that, you know, we in the treaty, we basically stated we would pay them. Well, we weren't paying them and we never paid back the losses that their loyalists took. We never paid that back. And they were impressing us because, bottom line, we didn't owe those people that property. They were actually enemies. When the Constitution came around, which was a few years later, only citizens have the protection of the law of the land. This is very clear in the original Constitution. Inhabitants are welcome to live here and live under the umbrella of our system, but they're not citizens, and they don't have, technically, they don't have the rights. The Constitution, in every capacity, is always focused, and I point to the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment says no state can make or enforce any law that abridges the privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen. Now, we've had inhabitants living here. We've had people living here, whether they be immigrants or whether they be inhabitants, it doesn't matter. Does that mean that they are entitled to the privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen to be able to bear arms? No. To be able to have due process? No. But the Supreme Court has redefined that, and that was in the 1900s, where they said, yeah, everybody in the world has these rights. And so... this is when the Supreme Court had completely aggrandized all this. I've gone down this real rat hole. But the bottom line is that when we look at, you know, this concept of, I'll just say this concept of treaties, when we really look at, because this is what George Nicholas says, when you look at this supremacy clause, this is what he says: an attentive consideration of this will show the committee that they can make no treaty. He's talking about treaties here. And as a matter of fact, I'll just start it from the beginning. Have we not seen in America that treaties were violated, though they are in all countries considered as the supreme law of the land? Was it not therefore necessary to declare in explicit terms that they should be so here? How then is this Constitution on a different footing from the government of Britain? The worthy member says they can make a treaty or a debt contract relinquishing our rights and inflicting punishments because all treaties are declared paramount to the constitutions and the laws of the states. An attentive consideration of this will show the committee that they can do no such thing. They can't make a contract with another country or a treaty with another country over things they have no authority, because this is what he says. The provision of the sixth article, the supremacy clause, is that this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States. In other words, they actually have to have the authority to make the treaty. They have to have the authority to make that debt agreement. Shall be the supreme law of the land. They can by this make no treaty or debt which shall be repugnant to the spirit of the Constitution or inconsistent with the delegated powers. The treaties they make must be under the authority of the United States to be within their providence. It is sufficiently secured because it only declares that in pursuance of the powers given, they shall be the supreme law of the land, notwithstanding anything in the Constitution or laws of particular states. And so when they create this debt, and they make this exchange, and even though they've been unconstitutionally giving away our gold to pay these things, when it comes down to it, folks, when they melt down the system is going to be melted down soon. As a matter of fact, the more people start talking about it, it'll probably expedite their, you know, pushing their agenda forward so that they can actually melt the system down. I'm here to tell you, folks, you need to get your representatives to understand that that is fraudulent debt. You need to get people to understand that they have no authority to make these treaties with foreign nations. They can only make treaties regarding commerce or war. They cannot actually align and adjoin the United States to the United Nations. There is no allowance in the Constitution to allow that to happen. And we've got basically actors like Bill Gates and all of the rest of these affluent people that are lurking in the background where I honestly think that they're all working together. I don't think Elon Musk is as clean as everybody thinks he is. When you make that kind of money, I honestly believe you are automatically added to that boys club. And, you know, even though Elon Musk seems to be an outsider, come on, he's building the Internet of Things with his SpaceX program and, you know, all of these satellites that he's launching. Come on. I forget what it's called. I forget what that satellite array that he's launching over the next few years, to where having internet, direct internet, is no longer necessary. You don't need to, you know, actually create the cables. They're going to create a satellite system to actually provide that. And, you know, I don't think that that's a good thing, because I don't think 5G and those types of transmissions are safe for human beings. I mean, nice intent, but government shouldn't be subsidizing this. But anyway, I've really derailed myself from what I wanted to talk about. But I needed to clarify that debt's fraud. You need to understand this. I'm not a conservative entertainer. I give you content. I read these documents for you so that it's irrefutable what these men said. It's not what GR has kind of thrown out there and say, hey, you know, I think they said this. No, this is not editorializing. This is not entertainment. And so I'm running low on the time here. So I promise I will get back to the exorcism, because, you know, once I get through a few more feedback things, because there's a few things I need to talk about, I will get back to setting the record straight, because I want to be clear, folks. You know, I am postulating and I am asserting that none of the amendments, the, you know, the 16th, 17th, these amendments are the evil boogeyman to a lot of these conspiracy theorists. And none of these amendments are really the sources of our problems. They're not. We can reclaim and fully enforce the Constitution and force the federal government into compliance without having to rescind any of these amendments. We do not have to repeal them or rescind them. We can use the First Amendment to actually change things. And when I say the First Amendment, I'm not talking about the First Amendment that, you know, we actually have, you know about. It's the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights that was actually ratified. Connecticut actually ratified the apportionment amendment, which was the first out of the 12. And why is it not ratified, and why are they not holding it? Because that would fix our representation. We could use it, sure, but we still have the power. That's the beautiful thing about Article 6 and the First Amendment that we have, the right of petition, and the 14th Amendment. Those three things empower us completely. Now, we could, sure, you know, we could use the real 13th Amendment. You know, there's another amendment out there that would actually help a little bit. It would actually bar lawyers from being able to be involved in government. They cannot have a public office. Think about this. If they're a part of the Bar Association, they can't even be judges. You hear that? Go read the original 13th Amendment that was ratified. Yeah, we could use it. But my point is, we don't need it now to actually reclaim it and then restore these things. We can actually force compliance of the Constitution without that First and 13th Amendment. Sure, we could rescind the 17th Amendment as a part of the process, but it's not the goose that lays the golden egg, nor is it the source of all the problems. As I've covered this, the state legislatures still have a right to suffrage because they never gave that suffrage based on the 17th Amendment. They still have that right of representation in the Senate, and they're not getting it. So we can stir that hornet's nest and what to do and how to do that, but the 17th Amendment isn't really causing that. It is the corruption of our government that's causing these problems. And the over ominous, the 16th Amendment's allowing them to bankrupt us and go read the 16th Amendment. It only changed the form of direct tax, a direct tax that was apportioned to the states, that was actually applied to the states. Instead of directly applying it to the states, the federal government got the states to ratify. That's questionably ratified, but it still doesn't give them a blank check to spend money. It doesn't give them the ability to violate the Constitution. It only shifts this focus of the 16th Amendment to income, but it still doesn't fix the uniformity clause. They still have to have a uniform application of the 16th Amendment. In other words, everybody has to pay the same thing. That was the huge requirement right there at the beginning of Article 1, Section 8. And the 16th Amendment doesn't even touch uniformity. It only changes from apportionment to a direct tax of income. So I'm just telling you, there's no boogeyman in all of these things that are creating all of these factions amongst the conservatives. What you call conservatives, I call anti-constitutional, because, you know, if they got their head straight, all of these people and all these organizations are the people that are leading this charge are actually, I'll just say, they're agents of the dark side. They don't even know that they're agents. They really think they're doing good things, and they believe that there's, you know, a great blessing in store. You know, Allah is waiting with 70 virgins for them. It's almost that dark. They are not doing what needs to be done. So when we come back, there's a few more things I need to get into. Then the reason I'm only glossing over these right now is because I'm actually going to get into the bean counting again and details regarding the 14th Amendment, the 16th Amendment, and the 17th Amendment. So after this promo, when we come back, I'll actually be diving into some new topics. One of those topics is actually going to be the oath. We'll be right back. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. All right, so forgive me for doing the film at 11, you know, giving you a little bite, because I mentioned we're going to be talking about the oath, and I am. But what's come up throughout the week has been this conversation regarding critical thinking and teaching people to critically think. It was because I mentioned on the show that parents need to start teaching their children. And I will get into why this is a lot easier than you think to teach a child how to critically think. And the real reason why it's a lot easier than you think is because adults have a hard time learning and becoming critical thinkers. Why is that? Well, because the older you get, the more biases you accumulate. And I'll give you a good example. When you were growing up and you had an encounter, not everybody has an encounter that a vicious dog bites them or attacks them. But if you're a young child and a dog bites you, then you instantly change how you see dogs. And you'll see dogs as a threat, and you will have this baked-in bias of fear of dogs. That's how those types of things occur. And so how you as a child receive and obtain information and provide information, you know, to the people and the world you're living in, that actually creates this process, what we used to call if and then rules, right? If I see a dog, and because I got bit by a dog and all dogs are vicious, I create this rule that all dogs are vicious, then I create this if and then rule. Well, if I see a dog, then I'm going to run. So you can actually kind of head this off at the pass, because you can start teaching a child when they're, you know, old enough to start getting to school, 4, 5, 6, they actually can start learning about biases and become a self-aware of how they could easily be obtain a bias. And so the problem with adults is many of them are not mature enough or adult enough to admit that they've got biases. I mean, they really believe some of these things. One of the examples I remember hearing when I started learning about this and this critical thinking of how to challenge, you know, things in your life and how to challenge stuff, was this gentleman was speaking about his wife who believed that you had to cut the ends of the ham off for it to taste right when you baked it. And so, because that's how her mother did it, and it always tasted so much better. It's not that they ever ate it without the ends, but it always tasted good. And so she was conditioned to truly believe this bias that cutting the ends off, because her mom believed it too. And this gentleman, you know, he was one of those guys to challenge, challenge, challenge. And so they actually had all three generations of moms, grandma, mom, and his wife was all sitting at the, I think it was a Christmas dinner or whatever, where they were having ham. And he saw the ends cut off the ham, because he'd always ask, why do you cut it off? Because it tastes better. And he goes, why? What properties in physics occur that makes it taste better? I just didn't understand that. He wouldn't let it go. And are you one of those guys? If that's you, then that's good. But we still have our own biases to deal with. But anyway, what ended up happening was he goes, oh, hey, Mom, because he basically talked to his wife's mother. And he says, I understand that you've always cut the ends off your ham like this to make it taste better. She goes, yeah, it's always tasted better when you cut the ends off. And he goes, well, where did you learn that? And she goes, well, I learned it from Mom. And he turned to Grandma and he goes, Grandma, why did you cut the ends off of the ham so that it would make it taste better? I mean, what was happening? And she looked and she goes, I don't know what you're talking about. Well, and then Mom actually said, well, you always cut the ends off the ham. And she goes, I had to cut the ends off so it would fit in the oven. And instantly, everybody's paradigm was shattered. Mom and wife's paradigm, oh, you got to be kidding me. It had nothing to do with taste. It was a functional thing. And so I'm just saying that that's how easy that we get baked in our childhood when we see those things. And so we have to start acknowledging that we have these biases because, you know, she wasn't going to give up cutting the ends of her ham. And the point is that we have a magnitude on top of these biases, on top of these things, we have a multitude of conflicting information. In other words, back in the days of the framers, they only had standards, you know, the Odyssey, the Iliad, all of, you know, the Cicero, Plato, all of these books that were written, they all read the same thing and they didn't have misinformation. So they were able to logically deduce based on all of the different stories. One of the things, and I just had a conversation today where we were talking about Hamilton, Washington, Madison, and Jefferson. And it took, if you don't listen to the biographies of each of these men, you really don't get the full picture. Because if you just listen to the biography of Hamilton, you would think the sun came out that guy's back end. And I'm telling you, Hamilton had real dark sides. He was a decent man, but he made mistakes. We all make mistakes. I'm not judging him, but I am telling you that he was a political actor. He chose to be a political actor so that he could drive agendas and use his influence. In other words, I don't think that that's a good man. And I'm able to deduce that because I've read and listened to the biographies of Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, and Madison from different authors as well, where they've even talked about these relationships between these men. And so unless you and I can't tell you that I have the facts, but based on how the biographies were actually written and the information that they used to compile it, I think I have a good deduction to realize that Hamilton was the problem. And so Washington really wasn't the problem. Washington was really a good man. I will also say this, because it came to my, you know, I realized this a long time ago in the 70s or the 80s after I joined the Marine Corps. I realized that I was misinformed regarding some of the things about George Washington. And the reason I was misinformed and believed some of those things is because what the progressives have been doing is been trying to release enough data to discredit these men so that it makes people actually, you know, ill to think about the framing of this nation and our Constitution. In other words, this is a way they're trying to undermine the nation. This is only one of the many ways that they're using their tentacles. But anyway, the bottom line is we all have to make the decisions and build our decisions on empirical facts, and simple data doesn't do it. When we just look at the data, anybody can extrapolate that and manipulate it. It is paramount to challenge the facts as well until one safely deduces the truth. Once you've deduced the truth, and when it comes to the scriptures, the only way you'll really know the truth and the only way the truth is given is through the Spirit. And any Christian will tell you this. But sometimes, you know, we point, the scriptures. No, the scriptures will not give you anything without the Spirit. So anyway, What we have the opportunity to do is teach our young children not to create biases and how to recognize manipulation. Because when you look at the way they teach math, when you look at how they're teaching everybody all of these things, you can teach your children quickly that the crap they're learning in school is manipulation and actually indoctrinating them into a way of thinking instead of how to think. And so when you actually do basic math compared to Common Core math, a child will then go, well, once they have understood basic math, they'll go, why am I being forced to do this? Because it's a form of manipulation. And your child will start getting it. This is how we wake up the youth to rebel against the established progressive communist regime. Because it is inherent. That's what I said last time. It is inherent in all children to challenge the establishment and established paradigms. Okay? So, enough said about that. I hope that hopefully that really helps, you know, get everybody thinking. Now, let me get back to the oath of office. I started on this. I kind of laid this out there. There is only one Constitution. There's only one. And that's because the Constitution being a compact, it is, let me just say, it is violently incompatible to think that a compact can be completely changed. I mean, think about this. You go into a renter's agreement, and your landlord has the ability to rewrite, reword, and change the understandings of that agreement that you went into. It's almost like you agree to do something with the Lord, and all of a sudden, you know, let me stay away from that. When we create a compact, how that thing was defined, this is a fundamental tenet of compacts. How it was defined is how, and how it was understood is how it is to be applied. You can't start changing it because you've interpreted it differently or because society has changed. You must, and Madison and Jefferson and even Washington in his farewell address address this, saying you must amend the Constitution to make its adjustments if there is a deficit. If there is a problem, it must be amended. Now, every convention of states person that just heard me say this probably got all tickled and pink and going, well, this gives us this opportunity. No, it doesn't, because our problem today has not been the Constitution. The real problem has been the United States government in the early 1900s, and this is all basically from the essential, because most people think that in 1871 with the Organic Act, and believe me, we're going to cover the Organic Act over the next couple of months. Once we get past the exorcism, you know, there's a few more things I'm going to cover, but we're going to cover the Organic Act before the Constitution Day, before September 17th. So, as you look at the compact and as you look at, you know, the amendments to the compact, this country should be doing a lot of things. I mean, almost everything completely different. And so we're in this mess not because there is another constitution. It's because the government assumed this, because what they did was they took the original Constitution and these amendments and they created the annotated Constitution. That really kind of started back in the early 1900s when all of a sudden people started, you know, going, hey, you know what, you're getting a little too progressive. And this is where the courts and everybody else, because they already started changing the paradigms, or actually making people believe that the courts have the power to create law. They don't. It's not in the Constitution. It's not there. They only have the power to make judgments based on fact and evidence. I mean, read Article 3. There's nowhere where they can interpret, where they can just, you know, on the whim. They have to look at the Constitution and base the case on facts and evidence, not feelings. And so As we look at the two constitutions, why is this so important? What does this have to do with the oath? Because the Constitution, the original Constitution, demands that everybody take an oath to this Constitution. And anybody that takes an oath to a different Constitution, if you take an oath and it says, I will support the Constitution of the United States, and you just look at the annotated Constitution and say, well, that is the Constitution. No. Your oath may be valid if you actually took and said the proper words of the oath of office. The Constitution demands that you actually support this Constitution, not a living Constitution, not a Constitution where the child has started making it up as they go along. It's just they're playing a game with us, and they've been manipulating, and it's all a game. And they're making up the rules as they go along. That's why we're in this mess, folks. But whose fault is it? It is our fault. Because clearly, we have the responsibility to petition government. We haven't been taught this. I actually met an immigrant. I actually had a conversation with an immigrant. A guy was not born in the United States. And by the time he came to school, when I talked to the guy, you know, I had no clue whatsoever that this gentleman was, you know, a foreigner. And I said, you know, you sound like an American. He goes, well, I grew up in the education system. I came here before I started. I was that young. And I go, oh, okay, well, wow, that's great. But he speaks fluent, a few different languages. And as we started talking, I said, well, what do you know about the right of petition? And he goes, nothing. And I go, do you know anything about the right of religion, your religious expression? And so, oh, yeah, I know that. What about speech? Do you know about the right of speech? Yeah, I know that. And so I kind of covered some of the inalienable rights. And I said, but you don't know anything about the right of petition in government for the redress of grievances? No. But he understood the right of assembly. How is this? How is this that people kind of get exposed to this, but we've all whited out or we've, you know, kind of deleted those last lines of the First Amendment? How'd that happen? The progressives have successfully convinced us that we have this right of protest, that, you know, we have this right of, you know, breaking the law. Clearly, civil disobedience, when you're going out and marching in the street, that is not legal. You have no right to stop anybody. So the whole point is, and this gets back to the connecting the dots, they are required, if they are fulfilling a job as an elected official, they are required to support that Constitution. They're required to take that oath. Even if they take that oath and they follow, they happen to think that this annotated Constitution is the real Constitution, ignorance of the law is no excuse in any country. You have to understand that when they become ignorant, they can start pretending, and they don't even know they're pretending. Do you get that? Do you get that? Most politicians don't even know that they're pretending. These decisions were done by dark and nefarious people a long time ago, and as they started getting away with it and creating this annotated Constitution, I've actually had conservatives come up and say, hey, could you please give me the, because I need to understand the Constitution better, and I believe the annotated Constitution is just what I need. Serious, folks. I'm not kidding. There are people that actually cling to, and they think that annotated Constitution is a gift from God because it explains everything. Because they believe in the legal system, they believe in all of the walls and the levels of this house of cards. It is a house of cards. Do you understand what I just said? It is a house of cards. So, as we go through the debt, as we go through these oaths, as we go through the laws they're making that are based upon unconstitutional assumptions and all of these other things, what are we going to do? The only thing and the easiest thing to do is to basically get people informed, get them involved by signing petitions at a minimum. The minimum thing that they can do is sign a petition. We'd like them to actually contribute a little bit more, and we'd like them to show up when we present these petitions. I want to give you some numbers because this actually came up in the last week. Just imagine you live in a county of 30,000 people, and let's say you get 10% of the people in your county to go to the county commissioner's office and actually demand that they fulfill their oath and support these petitions in supporting the Constitution. That's 3,000 people. You couldn't even get all of those people into those offices. You'd have people standing outside screaming, "Do your job! Do your job!" And they would be scared. Now, it's always best to help the sheriff understand that you are only exercising your constitutional right. Now, we want to make sure that when you do assemble and you do form, do not block the streets. Do not block avenues of commerce. People have a right to conduct commerce. That is an inalienable right. Even though it may not be enumerated in that Constitution, they have that right. And as a matter of fact, we have laws that make it illegal to obstruct avenues of commerce. And it sounds like they're descending upon me. If you hear rocket fire or gunfire, you know I'm going down. But anyway, let me get back to what I'm trying to convey here. When we actually do our job and hold them accountable to the oath, regardless of what oath they take, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The Constitution demands that they take an oath to support this Constitution. If the Constitution is the supreme law in a Republican form of government, it is the supreme law. It is irrefutable. It is the supreme law. And it says that they are to support this Constitution, not a Constitution. Show me in the Constitution where there's anything, any enumerated power for the federal government to maintain and interpret that Constitution. It is very clear. It's in Article 5 that Congress can submit to the states how to amend it. But when they start adding words and redefining, that's the same thing as amending, folks. And so they've actually defrauded us in getting us to think that that's a legitimate Constitution. You know, I do know good people in law, and I've met good lawyers, and it basically shatters their life when they realize that they're a part of a corrupt institution, because the legitimacy of the courts is based upon this facade or this misinformation that they've created, that they have the ability to dictate law, to bend the law the way they want, and to actually mandate these things upon us. They have no authority to do that. But these are their biases. Remember, going back to critical thinking, it is hard for people to surrender their biases. It's hard for them to step away and say, "I'm a fool. There's no evidence that supports my thinking, even though I believed all of these things I've been taught." So it's really hard. And as a matter of fact, when you've spent all of your life going to school and working in a profession, and then all of a sudden, now what do you do? What do you do when you realize that you are involved in a real problem? Okay, so now you're starting to see, you know, where we are and what we have to do. And by actually getting people to become active and to lead and be champions of the Constitution, this is the secret. We have to stop electing political actors who secretly want to push an agenda down your throats. In a way, we are far better off. I'm going to repeat this. You are far better off electing a tyrant, a Democrat, an outright communist, because you know they're a communist, than somebody that you say, "Well, there's a good guy. He's a Republican. He's conservative," because he's lying to you. If he's not a champion of the Constitution, is not going to fulfill his office and demand full compliance of the Constitution, he isn't worth your vote. And you're better off allowing tyrants to get into office. Because guess what? Now everybody can have the conversation. Hey, we have yet to find a person that can be a champion for us. Why accept the devil in the details? You don't have to accept any devils. As a matter of fact, I know some people of principle that just do not vote because they're all devils. And if we all had that attitude, then we would all start working together and get motivated in getting people to actually challenge. If we were all united on the Constitution, folks, I'm telling you the truth. If we were all united on the Constitution and demanding full support and compliance to that Constitution, our problems go away. Because we start auditing and we start dismantling all this house of cards. We have the authority to actually dismantle the entire house of cards. All of this geoengineering, this could all be shut down. Everything, all of your problems go away. So why is it that we're so consumed with these myopic conservative organizations? I went down, this is kind of a newer organization that's really growing and it's women oriented. And you know, this person on social media, I love these guys. And I said, hey, are you a member? And no, but I love them. And I responded back without insulting her to say, I think most conservatives love that organization, without saying, well, it's just a controlled opposition organization. That's all it is. Because bottom line, when you're only focused on very specific things, you have your own agenda, you're turning your back on the rest of the Constitution. You can't fix the Constitution that way. The only way to fix the Constitution is demand full compliance and enforce the entire Constitution, getting government back into the framework of the Constitution. Now, forgive me, I've kind of ranted on all of this feedback today, but I apologize. I'm not here to entertain you, and I'm not here to make you feel good. You're the problem. Until you actually start doing things and telling people that we need to start uniting on the Constitution, you need to start helping people understand that that Constitution is a power of attorney. It is a limited and defined power of attorney, not a general power of attorney. You give people that view. And you prove to them by giving them these color-coded constitutions. As soon as I'm done with the roles, responsibilities, and powers color-coding, I'm going to post that so that you can actually see for yourself where the powers are. If it's not a power, they can't exercise it as a power. It's only a role and responsibility. Just because they may be able to schedule elections doesn't mean that's a power. It's a role and responsibility. The responsibility for elections is at the state level. And as a matter of fact, technically, it's at the county level. And there's very few constitutions at the state level that I've seen where the counties have actually delegated that the state controls every election within the state. In other words, the petition we're trying to do, and we need you to get on top of this, and we need your help on this, is to demand that your county sever itself from what that crappy system that the state's throwing down your throat. They don't have the authority to do that. And as a matter of fact, they're undermining your elections. Folks, you know, I know that we don't want to be a part of the problem. What we have to do is just change our view to say, I want to be a part of the solution, which means that you're willing finally to do the things that need to get done. You need to take a stand and you need to call on all people to unite on the Constitution and get full compliance to that Constitution. We do that, our problems are solved. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic and we need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.